Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hello again. This is after a week off for the Futures game and the MILB All-Star break. This is the Hot Sheet podcast, which means Hot Sheet is back and Josh is back. That's me. And Jeff is back. That's him. Say hi, Jeff.
Hey there.
We're burning the midnight oil or the 10:42 Eastern in the evening oil on the first of which would be two crazy trade deadline days. We're recording this tonight just because, you know, we want to get this out before the deluge of trades begins tomorrow anew and don't have to be recording while something crazy happens. But, you know, we're going to do what we always do, talk a little bit about a Hot Sheet and a lot about baseball and what we've seen over the past couple of weeks and all that good stuff. So let's start with the Hot Sheet, Jeff. We started with Blake Walston, Arizona left-hander at number one. What made you the picker this week? Put Blake Walston at number one.
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, when you're looking at a week like the one that we just had, or at least the period where it's not, you know, a clean, typical six-game series. So you're going to have, I guess, a bounty, a plethora, so to speak, of potential options, particularly on the pitching side. That were sort of able to compile because they potentially made, you know, two starts, maybe even three. I don't know if anyone made three actually, but of all those guys, Walston to me had the most consistent performance across both of his starts. Both five inning turns, both gave up an earned run each time, struck out eight in one and struck out 10 in the other. In the eight strikeout performance, he only walked one. In the 10 strikeout performance, he actually walked four, only allowed one hit, and it was a home run. So you just sort of look at, like, you know, sort of base runners. It was all sort of the same. I think it was four or five base runners in each. So just like the consistency, you know, I think also the fact, like, not to put, like, age and level there, but this is also a lefty that, you know, just turned 21 a little bit more than a month ago, like only by a few days. So he's in double A, pitching well in a tough environment. One of those starts was a home start in Amarillo against a Corpus Christi lineup that has a few guys, or at least one that's in the Hot Sheet actually this week as well, in Justin Durden. So I just thought across the board, degree of difficulty, the general sort of compiler stats that we'll look at just over the given sample. I think he just checked all the boxes, and I think of all the names on the list, he's probably the best, if not one of the better pitching prospects pretty easily. So yeah, sort of dug the Walston work this week.
Yeah, you know, he's taking on the task that nobody envies, and that is pitching in Amarillo, where, I mean, you know, pop-ups are home runs, and it's a super hitter's atmosphere. So it's really hard to kind of discern success for a pitcher at that particular location. I mean, his ERA right there is it's like
5.71.
Yeah, it's not super great. Where compared to where it was in Hillsboro, which was 2.55. Exactly. But 68 strikeouts and 60 and a third, probably still walking too many guys. But, you know, there's signs of success. He isn't getting his brains beat in too badly. So
yeah, I thought it was sort of, you know, coming out of the break, maybe a guy has some time to make an adjustment, whatever, relax, talk to a coach, like whatever it is. See a guy make two good starts that were pretty consistent in a tough environment as a young player. Okay. You know, guys are going to have bumps in the road. It's sort of, that's the way baseball is. It's sort of, you know, the story of the game is how you deal with you know, adversity. So I think it's a big part of it. And this stuff is good. I mean, he's not going to blow you away with heat, but he's got some hop in the fastball, some ride, good shape, good release characteristics. You know, the slider is fine. I like the curveball a lot. It's got a lot of depth. And he's got feel for a changeup too. I think a big part of it is just once he takes that turn and sort of really sort of hones in his command from being sort of average-ish now to above average to better, you know, maybe even plus, just based on the type of pitcher he is, how he moves, how the ball moves out of his hand. He's somebody that should, you know, sort of portend because of some of those traits, throw more strikes.
And I'm going to talk about someone that's going to surprise absolutely no one. Number 15 on the list, Jackson Brian Chorio, the breakout prospect of the year, post promotion to High A Wisconsin, where he's going from, you know, Zebulon to Appleton, Wisconsin, being exposed to a whole world of cheese up in the Midwest. The first series there this week, and he did pretty darn well. Got his first home run at the level on Saturday, and I think it was Saturday, and it was crushed. 100 miles an hour off the bat, about 410 to dead center on a line. Pretty impressive stuff for a guy who, again, is not only just 18 years old, he's not even 18 and a half. He would be in this coming year's draft class, the one that our colleague Carlos Collazo is out on the showcase circuit looking at right now. Like, he's that young and he's in High A already. I can't say it enough. There's a lot of markers there for this player to be incredibly special. I know I sound like a broken record, but the section of the record I'm playing is pretty darn good, and you might want to keep listening to it over and over and over again before you move to the next track. I also wanted to go next down the board, Jordan Walker. You know, right before our last issue went to press, I did a thing where I surveyed scouts about, you know, the best hitter and pitcher they'd seen all year. And one said to me, Jordan Walker. And, you know, one of the things that stuck out in his quote was that, you know, you see the massive exit velocities and the hard hit balls, but that he didn't think he had fully tapped into his power yet, which was kind of, you know, your eyes get real big, your pupils kind of dilate. Like, if he's not fully tapped into his power yet with the stuff we saw last year and this year, what kind of monster are we looking at here? And then this last two of the last three games before today, Monday, he hit two home runs on Friday and then two home runs again on Sunday. So that's four home runs in 3 days, which is pretty impressive considering he had eight home runs in the prior, I think, 72 games. So he's starting to tap into that power. Look out, Double A and maybe Triple A soon. What do you think about Jordan Walker and Jackson Chorio, Jeff?
Yeah, man. Got an opportunity to chat with Jordan Walker a little bit with Mason Wynn at the prospect pad before the Futures game. And he's a great guy, great kid. You know, really focused, sort of knows exactly, you know, in terms of his swing, how pitchers are pitching him. And I think he really defines himself as more of a contact hitter than even a power guy. But he's not necessarily looking to, you know, sell out in each pitch, or, you know, he's not looking to play hero ball and, you know, smoke a homer every time he steps into the box. It's just about taking good at bats, making contact on strikes, swinging at strikes, not expanding. And he's done a really good job of that since coming into pro ball. I really think that when you look at where he was as an amateur player, you know, to where he is now, that's an element of his game that I think had a lot of question marks, and he's done an excellent job of sort of just taking the next step, so to speak, in that particular area, just from a bat to ball and, you know, just a swing decision standpoint. Like, I didn't necessarily think he was going to be this kind of hitter at this level this soon. Thought he was a guy that would struggle a little bit with the swing and miss, and he hasn't as much. So, yeah, as you said, sort of look out. And he's the kind of guy alongside Wynn, Gorman, and some other players where, you know, you could potentially be talking about enough to acquire, you know, somebody here big at the trade deadline. You know, I don't know if it's Juan Soto, but I would imagine at least puts him in the running.
Yeah. And before we start talking about the trades that have gone down the last 48, 72 hours, we are going to take a short ad break right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Oh.
And we're back. So we're going to talk about some trades that have gone down in the last weekend or so. Specifically, the Luis Castillo bomb that dropped on, I want to say, was it Friday or Saturday night. The Reds made out like bandits, as did the Mariners. Let's be clear here. It's great that the Mariners are bolstering their rotation to try to end the longest playoff drought in American sports, and did so with the best starting pitching option that we know is on the market. It's good to see that those guys are going for it and really seizing the opportunity. And a pretty good arm goes to Seattle for the next couple of years. But they did give up a pretty darn good package and have bolstered what I will call Cincinnati's shortstopoly with Ellie De La Cruz, the new additions, Noel V. Marte, Edwin Arroyo, and they've also got Trey Faltine, Matt McClain, Jose Torres. I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys in their system, but they've got just an array of shortstop prospects right now, which is a great problem to have. I mean, shoot, if you look at the Ohio-based minor league systems, there is just, you could probably do a good top 30 of middle infield, or at least a 20 of middle infield prospects just for Cleveland and Cincinnati. But we're talking about Cincinnati. Jeff, what did you think about the Reds' return for Mr. Castillo?
Yeah, I think you got to start with, you know, of course, the two big shortstop prospects there. Noel V. Marte, I think, you know, a few years ago, probably was sort of viewed as a potential like 1-1 overall type of a prospect. I don't think I'm talking out of turn when I say that. There was a lot of helium around him when he first sort of came stateside. He hit there, if I remember correctly, there might even have been some sort of tall tales from that alternate site, you know, of some of the mammoth home runs that he had hit. We saw that it wasn't as quite as explosive as we had necessarily thought. He's still a very good hitter. You know, I don't think he's a shortstop long-term. There's probably some body questions maybe too. But I think overall, I mean, the kid can still really hit. Though I do think, you know, if we're talking about like an impact regular, I think there's probably some question there, right? Like there wasn't necessarily a couple of years ago, even a year ago, that, you know, there was, like I said, a lot of helium. People sort of viewed him as a potential, you know, all-star major leaguer at some point. But I don't think that's necessarily the viewpoint any longer. He's still a very good prospect, a top 100 player. I don't think that's a question. Evan Arroyo, on the other hand, has probably been the biggest breakout of last year's draft class. I almost wonder if you had asked, you know, secretly polled all 30 executives and asked them sort of where Edwin Arroyo would rank on their draft board now. I don't think I'm talking out of turn to say that like he could have gone in the top 10, certainly within the top 15. You know, I'm sure there's a few teams that picked in the first round that would probably want to do over and be able to swap with Edwin Arroyo. So really good pick up there. You know, and then we look at the couple of other arms that they acquired as well. You know, Andrew Moore isn't a nothing. You know, I think he has such a boring name that you just sort of expect it to be like, oh, Andrew Moore, great, you know. But in reality, Andrew Moore, you know, he's only 22 and, you know, at 6'5", he's got a fastball that sits 96 to 97 miles per hour. Believe per Trackman, he has been clocked as high, and I'm not kidding you, as 103 miles per hour this year. So obviously this is a guy that throws hard. It's a really low release, despite the fact that he is 6'5", you know, so it's a flatter VAA. Like with a lot of tall guys, a lot of it comes down to the fact that he gets really good extension. He's getting like 6 foot and like, you know, 4 inches, 5 inches of extension. He's getting down the mound, you know, that allows him to throw from a fairly low release height. His arm slot obviously helps that as well. And it's one of the reasons that he's got a near 40% whiff rate in his fastball. So he's one guy. Levi Stout is kind of down this year, but a guy that's shown 4 pitches. His changeup was a lot better last year than it's been this year. He hasn't been throwing it as much, so I don't know if there's something going on there. And they maybe think they can unlock that. But I really like the return overall, and even thought, like, beyond the headline names here, the two arms are interesting. And, you know, despite some turnover in the front office in Cincinnati, they still have a lot of good pitching coaches at the major league and at the minor league level. So perhaps they can unlock that with a couple of these guys here, particularly Moore, who throws so hard.
My favorite thing about Levi Stout, I remember last year I went to the Northwest to see Kirby and Brash, and I was hoping to see Julio Rodriguez, but he got promoted like the day I got there.
They're trying to keep him away from you.
They succeeded. I barely seen him in his career, and I was in the major leagues in Seattle of all places. I won't see him. But Stout was the guy on the third day, but I had to get home and, you know, get ready for the flight the next day. So I watched 3 innings and he was okay. And then I got home and I saw he went like super shove for the rest of the game. And I texted some scouts who were there and they're like, yeah, his fastball went up 3 miles an hour when you left. And he started throwing the changeup, which was his signature. It might still be this. And, you know, it was this hammer changeup. That's not really a thing you say. This nasty, nasty changeup, and just cut through everyone when you left. And it was one of those, oh, come on, sort of moments.
It's why you never leave a game early.
I get the sentiment, but
you know. last year, like the one Cape game, I left really early. I left like in the seventh inning. I think it was a blowout at Brewster, and I was like going to like meet my kids at the beach for the sunset with my wife. And like, as soon as I left the park and I packed up, Spencer Jones, now first round pick of the Yankees, hit an absolute bomb. And like, if I had been there just like 10 more minutes, I would have caught this bomb and had like a great video, but the memories with my children and family, much more worth it. But still,
did your children hit any bombs that day?
No. But
well,
you take a very nice family photo at Mayflower Beach. So, you know, in the end, who wins?
Well, I don't. That's up to you. But no. Anyways, America wins. Okay. Moving on, you know, the Yankees, speaking of which, their first rounder is Spencer Jones, but they made a big move today. They made a couple moves today, actually. They cleared out some prospects who were going to have to go onto the 40 man, and they used them to get some value. They swapped Hayden Wesneski for Scott Efros, a big league reliever who's under control for quite a while. And then, you know, that was the appetizer. And the main course was Frankie Montas, who has amazingly, I think, been traded four times now, and Lou Trevino for four prospects. That would be Ken Waldichuk, JP Sears, Cooper Bowman, and Luis Medina. Since I'm kind of obsessed with the 40 man, that's two guys who were on it, one guy who needed to in Waldichuk, and Bowman who didn't need to as of yet. But they've really turned a lot of their prospect. They've dealt seven top 30 guys, I think, and Cooper Bowman, who wasn't on it in the past few days, including the Andrew Benintendi deal to add Benintendi, Efros, and Montas and Trevino, and they might not be done. And they've done all of it without touching Volpe or Peraza or Wells or Dominguez or Will Warren. All those guys are still intact, which means they could either do something with them now or later, or, you know, hold on to them and see if they're going to be big league pieces. But they've really much succeeded. They've really succeeded in their goals of, you know, bolstering the rotation as best they could after finishing, you know, second or third or whatever in the Castillo Derby, adding two arms to the bullpen and, you know, putting a little more contact ability balance in the lineup and kind of bolstering themselves for the stretch run. What did you think of, I know we have disparate views on the two W pitchers, Wesneski and Waldichuk. What did you think of the moves?
Yeah, I thought the A's, I mean, we'll see how these guys do, but they're near finished products. I thought the A's did pretty well. You know, being able to land both Waldichuk and Medina, I think those guys are both rotation pieces, legitimately. So, you know, I thought that was a really good deal in terms of, you know, their return, and they've been making trades of late. I don't know if people are familiar with this, but they've made a lot of deals of late, and I don't know if the returns have always been great. I thought this was pretty good because I also think that Cooper Bowman can play. And I forgot they got JP Sears as well, who I think honestly long-term is probably going to be like a tweener kind of a pitcher. Maybe you could use him behind like an opener, you know, that kind of guy and whatever, maybe gives you big chunks out of the pen. He's versatile though. And I think he's pretty interesting. The stuff isn't huge. He's got command and deception. Waldichuk, the stuff is there. Yeah, honestly. And Medina has always had stuff. He's in this sort of period again where he's really commanding his stuff. And I almost feel like he took a big step forward right before the pandemic and then kind of caught up again in 2020. But I feel like he's a potential rotation piece for a team like this now. I don't know really what you're going to get out of sticking Luis Medina in the PCL and AAA.
Correct. And, you know,
one on the 40 now, right? He's on the 40.
He is on the 40. Correct. And I don't think you're going to get anything good out of sticking Luis Medina in the PCL,
no.
Specifically in Las Vegas, where that kind of atmosphere can hurt a pitcher's feelings. Mm-hmm. You put him in a place that's far more forgiving, like Oakland, and you'll see much better results. There's zero question that Medina's stuff is the loudest in this deal and possibly, probably in the entire system. When he's right, you're talking about three plus or betters, but it's just not consistent. He doesn't sync it correctly. He doesn't sync it up and doesn't show the command that you want to see often. He's just, when it's really good, when it's good, it's really good. It's, you know, edge of your seat, don't move type stuff. When it's not, he gets hit or he's wild. It's one of the most maddening arms in that system. And you're right. He did take a huge step forward right before the pandemic. Like he was just, you know, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn early in his career. It was very, very, it was borderline yips, but he got a lot better right before the pandemic. And then, you know, has been okay-ish. And the big question is, I always wonder, why has he not been in AAA? Obviously, they have their reasons why he's not in AAA yet. He is, he's been in AA in both affiliates for a while now. Or no, AA, he was in Somerset. He never pitched in Trenton. But he is electric. The thing with Waldichuk that I have heard from scouts, I've never seen him myself, somehow you have, is that the stuff is legit. The command and the arm action are scary, and they do not believe that definitively that he's, you know, a sure bet to stick in rotation despite the numbers. They talk about consistency of the slider. They talk about, you know, how long the arm action is in the back. We talk about how kind of he'll lose that delivery, and the Yankees themselves admitted that, you know, they worked with him to get more sturdy in the lower half of his delivery. And there's reticence. I've talked to scouts before, you know, the last 2 years about this, and it's come back consistently Wesneski over Waldichuk. And frankly, I talked to a scout as recently as this weekend about this thing. I said, you know, you've been on these guys for the last couple of weeks, how would you put those two? And it's Wesneski over Waldichuk for the reasons I just mentioned. You know, Wesneski's stuff might not be as loud as Waldichuk's, but the delivery and the command and the pitchability are a bit better at this point. So if you told me that Wesneski was going to be maybe a back end guy or maybe a mid rotation guy, and Waldichuk was going to be a powerful bullpen arm, I'd buy it. Is there a ceiling for more? Sure. But there's less certainty on it. And I know you're higher on Waldichuk, but that's kind of how I ranked them. They're two of the best arms in the system. I had them 4 and 5. So that would be the number one and two arms in the system. And, you know, with Will Warren coming right up on them. So they got some interesting pieces back there, and it'll be very interesting to see how both those guys play out over the next couple of years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like maybe I got just a better look at Waldichuk than I did of Wesneski. You know, I think the other part of it too is I'm sort of a sucker for a lefty with velocity in secondaries, and he's sort of one of these West Coast pitchability guys that added velocity. I know in terms of, you know, walking batters versus striking guys out and getting whiffs, that's sort of what the difference is there. But I mean, it's certainly difficult to definitively argue this one way or the other, because they're both guys that have sort of produced to a similar level and just sort of different ways. And I mean, it's not like Wesneski stuff is bad at all. Obviously it's a great slider. So,
and let's be clear here too. I mean, they were both valued highly by the clubs that were receiving them. One of them was part of a 4-player deal for two really good arms. And the other, Wesneski, was for a good big league reliever who's under control for, I think he's a free agent in 2028.
It's like 5 years.
That's not nothing. That's a really long time to get a controllable guy. So that was a valuable piece as well. And shout out to their scouting and development, man. They've done a really good job turning their arms into big league pieces over the last couple of years. I mean, last year, Jansen Junk got dealt for Andrew Haney. Say what you want, what Andrew Haney did in the big leagues, but it's a guy that maybe didn't necessarily fit on your big league roster at the time. I think Elvis Baguero was in that deal too. They've turned a lot of their arms into big league value, even if they're not on the Yankees. So they've done a really good, Glenn Otto, part of the Joey Gallo deal. Again, not a guy who's really performed the way you'd want in New York, but the fact that they got that guy and turned him into a part of a package for the guy they thought was going to be the last piece of a masher lineup was impressive. And again, they've done a really good job. They turn these guys every year. You'll find a pop-up arm who comes out of nowhere and jumps onto the map. This year, one of those guys is Luis Serna, who you'll read about in the issue of BA, who might be on their way to your inbox now. It's probably there now. He's one of the big sleepers that popped up out of the Florida Complex League, 17-year-old with pitchability, up to 94 already. One of my favorite low-level arms in the minors right now. You know, notch below my very tall prospect friend, Harlan Susanna. That's the best guy in the complex leagues this year as far as arms are concerned. But I don't know why I've veered into him, but I really can't go a day without talking about him. So in any case, you know, we've talked about trades. We've talked about the hot sheet. Jeff, I know you're going to see some interesting arms this week. You got about 5 minutes or so. Go.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll see some interesting arms this week, but I'm also in the process of, I know we are as a site of collecting best tools for different leagues. I'm doing it as well for the Cape Cod League. So I have all those surveys out. I'm, you know, have a group of scouts and cross checkers and folks that are helping me out with that. Talking to coaches and GMs. I had the broadcasters do one as well. So I'm interested to get that back, just especially hearing, you know, who are the sort of hot names coming off of the Cape Cod League. I obviously have my own biases, but I'm trying to do the reporting here, despite having seen several games. Regular season's going to end tomorrow, and we'll have some playoffs for a week or so. So I'll be mixing that in with getting some pro looks, and then after that, it's going to be all pro, but that's all right, because there's a lot of decent pitching up in Worcester actually right now. So the AAA rosters are a little bit more interesting. That season goes a little bit longer. I think there might be some playoffs mixed in as well. So yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff going on, and I'm doing stuff in the pro and amateur side, just because as I'm wrapping up the Cape Cod League here, doing, you know, the overall ranking of players, et cetera. It's really my favorite time of year, and I'm excited to, you know, continue to roll that stuff out here at BA.
I just recently put up a piece I sat down with Anthony Volpe and had him break down his swing and how it's changed from high school through last weekend. That was a pretty cool piece that he essentially wrote for me, which is work smarter, not harder, kids. And I saw Kyle Harrison and Randy Rodriguez. And this week, there's not a whole lot of teams in the area, but if I get a chance and my car behaves, I will see Jorge Vera for Kannapolis when they're coming to Zebulon. But other than that, we're updating our 30s. We're doing best toolses. We're and we are going to rank all the traded prospects once the dust settles. We're going to put the draft guys into their various orgs. So it doesn't stop here. You know, we've got our stuff going on. Like I mentioned, Carlos is out on the showcase circuit watching the Max Clark extravaganza for the next few weeks and seeing how those 2023 guys line up. And if you are a subscriber to BA, you already know how we think they line up right now. So lots of good stuff happening, lots of good stuff that will happen. And sooner or later, it's going to be actual top 10 season, Arizona Fall League, the greatest of all leagues, and all sorts of good stuff from now until then. Any last words, Jeff?
No, man. Let's get it.
All right. For Jeff in Massachusetts, I'm Josh in North Carolina. For Parrot, this is Bear. See you later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.